few here.
Okay,
I'm on the phone. This is Bob Fetrakis on the Solartopia show, also in the studio, my co-host Harvey Wasserman. I'm talking to Hank Alberelli. The book, A Terrible Mistake, The Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Secret Cold War Experiments. Why? Over 800 pages, a significant work. I have no idea how long it took you to dig this information up. But why is this book coming out now?
Well, because I finished it about a year ago. Now,
that sounds like my dissertation a few years back.
Well, it took me, I worked on the book for a little over 12 years. Two of the years were pretty casual until I could figure out where I was really going with it. For the first 2 years, I thought I had a 10,000 word article, but you know, 2 years in, I realized it was a book, and 5 years in, I realized it was actually a few books, and that's why the book is actually.
Yeah, I've seen that. Book one, book two, book three, book five.
And the main reason for that is because it just covers so much ground in time. I mean, the Olson died in November 1953, but the case went on through several phases right up until today, because it's, except for the book, it's still unresolved legally. There was a grand jury investigation opened in the early 1990s. I think it was officially sometime in 1993. By Robert Morgenthau, who's a very important district attorney in terms of history in New York City, recently retired, I think at the age of 93 or 94. But reopened an investigation in the early 90s, and even that investigation was never reached any resolve, and just sort of died out with no real closure or statement. And so we're left with my book, which in my view and in the view of a lot of other people proves that what we were dealing with wasn't a suicide as alleged in 1953, and actually was a murder.
And as we know, there's no statute of limitation on murder.
That's right. None whatsoever.
And, I mean, one of the things I was getting at as I was looking at your epilogue, mind control victims, and here in Ohio we've had recent problems. The psychologist who was at Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib was just appointed at Wright State here, and one of the reasons he was a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, is because he was licensed in Guam and in Louisiana, which allows their psychologists to drug people. And there was tremendous controversy in Ohio among people in the profession who, you know, said essentially, look, he's drugging them for interrogation. And then you have the study of assassination, recent reports, New York Times, other places, arguing again that Cy Hirsch and others, that there's assassination squads going on in the U.S. And you also have the Nuremberg Code in there. And many people have argued from the attack on Iraq to other practices that the U.S. is perhaps violating the principles of Nuremberg. So your book in many ways seems to be not only unresolved historically, but a lot of these issues that were thought to be, you know, from the deep dark past are still ongoing, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all of those things you listed are still going on. Assassination squads or assassins are everywhere. People think it sounds like, you know, fiction, but it's not at all. I mean, the State Department employs what they call counterterrorism agents, but they're basically assassins. A lot of them are former police officers. But everything going on today actually originated in the 1950s with various Army or CIA programs. The black sites of today were basically the safe houses of the 1950s, and they were everywhere worldwide, and primarily set up as covert sites where people were interrogated under the Cold War. Assassinations, of course, were very common in the 1950s and 60s. And then rendition was practiced quite widely in the 50s, but for some reason, the agency is very good with words, but most of their documents at that point in time just employed the word kidnapping. They were pretty blunt about it. And there were a lot of kidnappings that happened throughout the 50s and 60s, but to sum it up, nothing that's going on today wasn't going on in the 50s. So a lot of people, and I was actually disappointed to see this emphasized so much in my research, but people that say, you know, the United States doesn't torture, and historically we haven't tortured, and all this started, you know, under the Bush administration with Rumsfeld and Cheney. That's true. You know, I mean, it did pick up then, but we've done it since the 1950s. There's no doubt about that. And the proof of that is just the files that, you know, the CIA and the Army generated themselves. I went through hundreds and hundreds of pages and case studies that the CIA did of what they called enhanced interrogation sessions with people, where everything was used from every drug you can imagine: LSD, mescaline, heroin, morphine, sodium pentothal. Occasionally they would use shock treatments, a few times lobotomies, and a lot of agents didn't survive those sessions. Obviously, when you had a mix of things being used like that, and I've got case studies from several sessions that actually went on 7 to 14 days, and this was in the 50s and the 60s. So people can only imagine what's going on today with techniques that are a little more sophisticated, supposedly, and people being a little more careful than they were in the 50s.
Who was Frank Olson, and what sort of person was he? Why should we care if his murder is resolved?
Well, people ask the last part of the question first. I mean, Olson, people should care because he was a United States citizen, and born and raised in the United States, and he was murdered by the government, and so people should care about people that are murdered by the government for no reason whatsoever. Olson was a young man when he was initially recruited by the Army to go to work at Camp Dietrich in Maryland. It was known as Camp Dietrich when it first opened. It's known today as Fort Dietrich. But Fort Dietrich is basically the chemical and biological warfare center for the United States, and it was then, it still is now. It was founded in the early 40s by a fellow named George Merck, who was the president and founder of the Merck Chemical Company, which is still in existence today, and a huge pharmaceutical distributor and provider. But Olson was recruited by the first director of Camp Dietrich, a man called Ira Baldwin, who had been a professor, chemistry professor at the University of Wisconsin. And when he was handpicked to be the head of Camp Dietrich, his first charge was assemble a team of you know, experts as quickly as possible. Nobody had any idea how what the number of people initially were going to be that would work there. It's up to around, I think, 6,000 or 7,000 now. But then, I mean, it was, to begin with, it was 2 or 3, and Olson was probably the 5th or 6th person to be recruited in 1942 to go there. And in 1942, he was a young Army officer because he worked his way through the University of Wisconsin partially as a member of ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Corps, and to help him pay for college. He wasn't from a wealthy family. He's from a very blue-collar family, and financing college was a tough task for him. So it was really a welcome call when he was summoned, when Baldwin offered him a job to go to Frederick, Maryland and work at Camp Beatrick, and he was pretty excited about it. So he packed his wife and 2 children at that time. He ended up with 3 children, but into an old car and drove across the country. I think it took him 4 or 5 days from Texas. He was stationed in Texas at that point in time. And got to Maryland and lived in a small apartment in Baltimore and commuted back and forth from Baltimore to Edgewood Arsenal for about 4 or 5 months before Camp Beatrick actually opened. It hadn't even been completed as a facility by the time Olson got there. And so when he transferred over from Edgewood Arsenal to Camp Beatrick, he was literally among maybe 20 people at that point in time that were going to work there. But the recruitment was on a fast track, and there were hundreds that were recruited right behind him.
And so he ends up dead in what you're alleging is murder. How much of this experimentation that ends up at Fort Detrick's and biochemical has roots in Nazi Germany?
Well, I don't know that it has. I don't know that any of it has roots in that Nazi Germany. I know that some of what was continued. Well, I guess it would have roots on that basis. But the Army had some pretty firm and expansive plans when Camp Beatrick was opened initially, and none of it really related to Nazi science. But immediately following the war, in 1945, 46, 47, there were a couple projects that the Army launched where they were trying to capture and gather as much Nazi science as possible, and a lot of that was in the chemical warfare and biological warfare category, and a number of scientists were recruited for Nazi scientists, and I use the word former loosely because I think a lot of these people actually still had
the same sentiments.
But a lot of those were recruited to go to work at Edgewood Arsenal and Camp Beatrick. I think more ended up at Edgewood because of the nature of the work than they did at Detrick. But a good number did end up at Detrick. And then even more ended up at numerous colleges and universities across the country, a lot of them very prestigious universities, John Hopkins, Columbia. There were former Nazis everywhere. There were thousands of them.
And the LSD experiments, and I'm going to give you to my co-host here, Harvey Wasserman, who's familiar with that era. But the key question maybe you can address is, did the government help promote the counterculture of the 1960s through these experiments? Let me give you to Harvey here.
This is quite a staggering book here, and I want to compliment you on your years and years of research.
Thank you.
Are we 100% sure that these experiments have stopped?
Now, which experiments?
Well, the LSD experiments and the kinds of things that they did.
No, I think the drug experiments continue, you know, today. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, specific experiments involving LSD, I think those have stopped because I think, or because I know the agency and the Army learned all that they could about LSD, but there are new drugs that are being tested all the time.
Is this part of warfare, these new drugs?
You mean the research?
Is it their vision that these drugs would be used in warfare? Is that why they're doing it?
Oh, yeah, sure. And a lot of it now falls under the term non-lethal weapons, which they didn't use in the 50s and 60s. But, I mean, it's just a wide array of drugs that are being tested.
Wow.
To be used, you know, supposedly as non-lethal weapons, but the LSD, I mean, was just tested so often and so widely in the 50s and 60s that they know everything about it, and there were some disastrous tests. I mean, Edgewood Arsenal alone in the 50s, from 1950, the beginning of 55 through about 1962, tested LSD on 6,700 service people.
Oh my God!
And it was it's interesting. It was only men. They wouldn't test it on women. Nobody can explain why they wouldn't test it on women. But
no LSD for the women.
No, they had a firm rule that women couldn't take part in the testing. Now there weren't that many women in the service then anyway. There were some, but
well, except for maybe Margaret Thatcher, they used it on her. But what was their conclusion about LSD? Do you have access to their final, their findings about LSD?
There weren't any published final findings. I talked to Sidney Gottlieb, oversaw the technical services branch at the CIA, and really pioneered the LSD research with the CIA. And I spoke to him about that, and there's a long section in the book where he summarizes the findings and basically says, in the same session that, and it's throwing, is that they found nothing significant, but they learned some significant things, and he wasn't real specific except for saying that they were, that one of the things they learned and that continued is that they could use LSD to induce psychosis. And
did he?
Is that a real success?
In his interview with you, did he keep saying "Oh wow" or anything like that?
No.
Okay, but so is there somewhere a file, a written file that would, explain to the public exactly what their findings were with LSD?
Well, there's a lot in the book, and a lot of the experiments are documented in the book. But do you mean like a summary of
a summary, or even the?
Not that I've seen. I have a copy of what the CIA in 1975, as a result of the Rockefeller Commission that was created to allegedly investigate domestic abuses by the CIA at the prompting of Gerald Ford. The Rockefeller Commission requested that the CIA put together a briefing book on MK Ultra, and there's some general findings in that, and then there's a breakdown of all the various sub projects and where they were and who they involved. And MK Ultra, by its conclusion, involved 147 sub projects, and a sub project, for example, would be a good example would be like, say, a $150,000 contract to Columbia University for the period of 1954 through the end of 1955 to test the experiment with mescaline.
Well, listen, we actually
would be summarized, and
we actually have to wrap this, but this is incredibly interesting stuff. It's an amazing book, and you're to be complimented on your on this book, A Terrible Mistake, by Hank Albarelli. I hope we can talk to you again.
Sure.
Are there any people wandering around who were veterans of those experiments, whose lives were changed, who, you know, became, who talk about their experience with the LSD.
The Unabomber.
The Unabomber was a survivor of the CIA's LSD experiments?
Yeah, at Harvard. He was a subject of an experiment overseen by a very well-known psychologist, Dr. Henry A. Murray.
Well, listen, Hank, we'll have to call you back and take this up again. That's astounding, and especially we want to know about George Bush's experiments and what happened to him. So, well, look, thank you very much. It's a tremendous book, and we will talk with you again. It's a terrible mistake, and your publisher is the Trinday, T-R-I-N-E-D-A-Y, trinday.com. So we'll talk to you again, Hank. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Yeah,
okay.
Look forward to it. All right.